Are y'all all right back there? Okay. For those of you who just came in, my friends call me Aunt Peggy, and I am a storyteller. I go all over the state in schools and festivals telling stories and have a real good time. Well, it's 1 o'clock, so I guess I will tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a story about old Jack. He was the laziest boy you've ever seen in your life. He was so lazy. When he got up in the morning, he was too lazy to put his feet in his shoes and bend down and tie him up. He just went barefooted. When he went to wash his face in the morning, he was too lazy to pick up a washcloth, put soap on it, and wash his face. He turned the water on full force, hung his face under the water, and let the water wash. And he never brushed his teeth. No. When he smiled, green slime fell out of his mouth. Yeah. And once he had bad breath, one time he went sashaying through some onions, and he sneezed on the onions, and the onions fell over dead. Yeah, lazy old boy. Then he moseyed outside, went down to breakfast, sat down at the breakfast table. Now, he was too lazy to pick up a napkin and tie around his neck, pick up a fork and eat with it. He hung his chin under the table, opened his mouth real wide, and shoveled in the food. Lazy old boy. Then he moseyed outside, plopped down on the ground, and counted the ants as they built their houses. One day his mama said, "Jack, get your lazy self up and go get yourself a job." Mm-hmm. "Yeah, ma'am, mom." Now remember, he's barefooted. "Mister, you got me a job?" "Yeah, Jack, come on in." Oh, Jack spent all day long shoveling all that good stuff from the horses and the cows over here in the corner. And then he went in the chicken coop, went squishy-squashy into the chicken coop, shoveling all that good stuff from the chickens over here in the corner. Now, at the end of the day, he didn't smell too good. His feet didn't smell too good either. Man paid him off, though. Gave him a penny. "Well, what'd you do with this little old thing?" "I ain't never seen one of these before." "Oh, you roll it on the ground." "Oh, I went into the water." He got home, his mom said, "Jack, what did the man tell you?" "Oh, a penny." "Well, where is it, Jack?" "I lost it." "What? You lost it? You dodo." "That ain't the way you bring home a penny. The way you bring home a penny is you take it and you put it in your pocket. Now you remember that." "Yeah, ma'am, mama." "I do that next time." Next time old Jack went to get a job, he worked so hard. Oh, he just worked so milking cows. He milked cows all day long, and the man paid him off with a big old jar of milk. Now Jack remembered what his mama said. He took that milk and put it in his pocket. Now, girls, you know, boys do not know how to walk easy, do they? No. They have to jump around and kick at things. And when he got home, his mom said, "Jack, what you got all over your britches?" "Milk, Mom." "Jack, you nincompoop." "That ain't the way you bring home milk. The way you bring home milk is you take it and you put it on your head. Now, you remember that." "Yeah, ma'am, Mom." "I'll do that the next time." Next time, old Jack went to get a job. He worked so hard all day long. And the man paid him off with a big old chunk of fresh green cheese. Now, Jack remembered what his mama said. He took that green cheese and put it on his head. Sashaying down the road and it got hot. Now you know, when you sweat, you do not sweat up, do you? My mouth can't help scratch me up a tooth. He gets cold. His mom said, Jack, what in the world is the matter with you, boy?
Mama.
No. My mouth's all stuck up in my eyes, all stuck up in. Got something in my nose and I can't blow it out. But I got cream cheese on my head. Oh, you yellow bellied sapsucker! That ain't the way you bring home cream cheese. The way you bring home cream cheese is you taste it. And you bring it home in your haze, and you remember that. Yeah, ma'am, Mama. I do that next time. Next time, old Jack's giving charges to work so hard. Down in the bakery. And you know how much fun working in the bakery is. Making all those cakes and cookies. Man paid them off. The wildcat. Now he remembered what his mama said. You ever tried to carry a cat home in your hands, you got trouble, right? Old Jack had trouble. He put that old cat in his hands. He scratched him and bit him and scratched him and bit him. Jack had to let him go. He's bleeding to death. Got on home. Mom said, Jack, what in the world is the matter with you? Mom, an old cat. Jack, ain't the way you bring home a cat. The way you bring home a cat is you take a string and tie it around his neck and put him on the ground. Now you remember that. Yeah, ma'am, Mom. I'll do that next time. Next time old Jack goes to get a job. He works so hard. Takes that. Man, oh, he worked real hard butchering. And you know what butchering is. That's when you cut up all those steaks and roast them all. Man, paid him off with a big old leg of beef. And tied a string around it and put him on the ground. Started putting it behind him. All the way home. But on the way it got hot. We got to sweating. And phew, we that smell. I think I'm going to be sick. I'm going to throw up. Oh! He gets home, his mom. Jack. What is that smell?
Mom, I don't know, but follow me all the way home.
Jack, you featherhead, that ain't the way you bring home butter. That ain't the way you bring home meat. The way you bring home meat is you take it and you put it on your back. Now you remember that. Yeah, ma'am, Mama. I do that the next time. Next time old Jack went to get a job. He worked so hard. He was exhausted. And the man paid him off. He gave him a pretty little gray donkey. Now Jack remembered what his mama said. He took that donkey, case of cake. He crawled up right under that old donkey, and the donkey walked away. Now, he wasn't going to be outdone. He went back to that old donkey, grabbed him by the old gray ears. Here they go down the road. Two gray ears up front, scrolling tail dragging the ground, two legs on the bottom. Go break your feet, kicking straight up in the air, and half full of yellow teeth going, ee-haw, 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 back down the road. Now, on the way over, he had to pass this great, big, beautiful house. Lovely young girl, sitting in the window, hadn't said a word for 5 years. Daddy said, the doctor said the only thing that can make her laugh happy is to laugh. And then he'll be happy. And then she was sitting there in the window, and she was so quiet, and she didn't say a word. She just sitting there, so sad and so lonely. Staggering down the road, she got to laughing and giggling and laughing and giggling.
about getting a job. And that was the end of that. Sandwich, if it doesn't squish out on the side, it's no good. It's got to squish out, hey, it's got to be real squishy. Take that peanut butter, then you lick it. And then telephone rang. I said, who? I can't talk to you right now. The telephone. My tongue, stuck. I'm on my tongue, something wrong with my tongue. I can't talk. I think it's stuck with peanut butter. Well, come on, call you back later. Now, I didn't know what I was going to do. Because you can't tell stories with your tongue stuck with peanut butter. So I thought, well, I take my two fingers. And I pull, and pull, and that button come loose. So I thought, well, I drink some water. Now, you don't ever drink water if you get your tongue stuck with peanut butter. It's a mess. So I took my some water, and I drank it, and fell down my breast. It's not funny. You don't ever laugh at somebody when they get your tongue stuck with peanut butter. That is rude. You are a very rude. Well, anyway, I said, well, I can't get a spoon. So I got the spoon. Took my spoon. Spoon. Got my tongue loose. Uh-oh. Daddy's in spoon. I couldn't get it off. Oh, well, you don't wear a white but No. You don't ever put water on peanut butter. It's too good. No, you don't waste it with water. Without thinking, a liquor again. And then I thought, well, I have to get something to get the peanut butter off with. Yeah. So I took my finger. Now, I never put my finger in my mouth at the earth. So I took my finger, and I washed it real good. And then I dried it real good, and I put it in my mouth. Oh, that is on my finger. I couldn't get it off my finger now. And then, without thinking, I licked it again. Now, if y'all get peanut butter stuck on your tongue stuck with peanut butter, you be very, very careful. It's very, very hard to get out. But that's the way I make my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But now, let me tell you a story with little old Jack again. Old Jack went sashaying down the road one day, and he saw a man plowing. He said, mister, that's a mighty pretty horse you got there. Jack, that ain't no horse. That's a mule. Sure enough, it's a mule. Yes, Jack. Oh, that's the prettiest little mule I ever saw in my life. With those long little ears and them soft fur and cute little tail. I want me a mule. Jack, you can
general store. Well, old Jack went on down the store, and everybody he saw, he said, "Go get me a mule. I want me a little mule. I want me a little mule." He got to the grocery store, to the general store, and he saw something over here in a basket that was brown and fuzzy looking. He looked at that and he thought, wonder what that is. And of course it was a basket of coconuts. He said, "Mister, what in the world is that over there in that basket?" Now the man knew that Jack wanted a little mule. And he figured he was going to have some fun with Jack. He said, "Why, Jack, them's mule legs." "Ain't they mule legs?" "Yeah, Jack. You take that home and you can have you a little mule." "Gee, mister, I want me a mule. I'm going to get me a mule." So he took the coconut home with him. He said, "Mama, mama, mama, I'm going to get me a mule. Mama, come here, mama got me a little mule leg." "Oh, Jack, well, let's go set you up on a little nest." So she made a real cozy little nest and she put it down. And Jack sat down on the nest. "Mama, you can bring myself out here because I can't leave my egg. I'm sitting on it. Ain't nothing happening, Mama." Mama bought him a big old plate of spaghetti and some chocolate milk. They spent the all night long on sitting on that egg. Next morning, she bought him some ham and eggs and bacon and sausage and biscuits. "Ooh, Mama, still ain't nothing happening. Mama, I think something's wrong with this mule leg. I think I better take it back and get me another." "Well, Jack, maybe you better." So Jack loaded the little egg into his little wagon. He's taking it back to town to get a better one, one that'll hatch out. And on the way, the wagon hit the bump. And when it hit the bump, the egg rattled out into the ditch. And all of a sudden, Jack saw something moving and moving and moving in the ditch bushes. And out shot this long-eared, fuzzy little tail, fuzzy little brown fur, shooting through the woods. He said, "Oh, it hatched out! There goes my little mule! My little mule hatched out!" And he went chasing after that rabbit that he thought was a mule. And he's still chasing that mule that ain't there. And that was the end of that. Thank you. When Cousin Thelma had a ghost in her house. One night they were sitting there and they heard this knocking. And they searched all over for it and they couldn't find it. And finally her daddy went over to an old desk that they had. And they listened. And inside that desk was the knocking sound. And it never stopped. And she said that they called the desk Old Knocker. They never could find the ghost. But they say that that really happened, that desk had a sound in it. We have a newcomer to our storytelling here at White Springs. It's Linda, isn't it? All right, Linda, if you will come right on up, if you all could make some way. This is a new storyteller, and I'm going to let her introduce herself, and we will settle back and listen to what she has.
Well, I'm going to need a chair.
You go right ahead. And thank you all so much for being here. We just want to have a good time at the festival, just walk around and have a lot of fun.
I think this is going to have to sit this way. I'm Linda Spitzer. I'll talk while I'm setting up. I have stories for all ages. I've been watching the age group change. So while you're sitting here, I'm from Miami, and I tell folk tales from all over the world, from all kinds of different cultures and people. But I specialize in Jewish folk tales. And sometimes we like to teach other people about our culture. That's what the purpose of this Florida Folklife Festival is that we come from all different backgrounds and we try to show each other how to understand each other. And one of the words that the Jewish people use to say hello and goodbye is Shalom Aleichem. And then the audience would say Aleichem Shalom. So let me try it. Shalom Aleichem. And you say Aleichem Shalom. This story is Elijah and the little pine tree. Once upon a time, way up north, there lived a little pine tree. He had a sturdy little trunk and shiny green pine needles and an aroma that just filled the air. But he would look down at himself and say, "Yuck! I don't like me at all. I wish I were big and tall like the oak tree. Or I wish I just had fruit like all the other trees, like oranges and apples, and children could just come and pick my fruit. Or I wish I had leaves that just change color like all the other trees in the forest." And the little pine tree started to cry. Well, in Jewish folk tales, we have a very favorite character. His name is Elijah, and he magically just appears in a costume or just comes into stories. And he brings about a happy ending to the stories, usually. Well, suddenly Elijah appeared and said, "What's wrong, little pine tree? See, even you call me little. I don't want to be little. I want to be big and tall like the oak tree. Or I want to have fruit like the fruit trees. Or I want to have leaves that change color like all the other trees in the forest. Well, little pine tree, I can grant you a wish. If you wanted to have any kind of leaf you want, what would you like?" "Oh," said the pine tree, "you know what I would like?" And with thinking for just a second, he said, "I would like gold leaves." "Gold leaves?" said Elijah. "Why would you want gold leaves?" "Oh," said the little pine tree, "then I would be the most beautiful tree in the forest." Well, the big old oak tree, who was right next to him, bent over and said, "You'll be sorry." Try that with me. "You'll be sorry." "Oh, no, I won't, oak tree. You're just jealous because then I'll be the most beautiful tree in the whole forest." Well, the very next day, the little pine tree had beautiful golden leaves. And they glistened in the sunlight and they glistened in the moonlight. He was so proud of those leaves. But you see, a man came into the forest. He saw the beautiful tree with the golden leaves, and he ran home and he got a ladder and a basket, and he pulled off every one of those golden leaves and took them home. "Oh no, oh no, look what happened. I don't like this at all. Elijah, please come back." Well, Elijah must have been pretty close by because he was right back and he said, "Okay, little pine tree, you're ready for your shiny green pine needles, aren't you?" "Oh, no," said the little pine tree. "You know what I'd like now?" "What?" said Elijah. "I would like glass leaves." "Glass leaves?" said Elijah. "Why would you want glass leaves?" "Oh, then not only would I be the most beautiful tree in the forest, but I would make soft, tinkly music when the spring winds blow." The big old oak tree bent over and said, "You'll be sorry." "Oh, no, I won't, oak tree. You're just jealous because not only will I be beautiful, but I will make soft, tinkly music as well." The very next day, the little pine tree had beautiful glass leaves. And when it rained, those leaves caught the raindrops. And in every raindrop, there was a beautiful rainbow. But then, when the soft spring winds blew, those leaves made soft, tinkly music. Oh, she loved those leaves. But strangely enough, an odd thing happened. A hurricane came and tossed those leaves down to the ground and they broke into 1,000 pieces. "Oh no, oh no, there go my beautiful leaves. I don't like this at all. Elijah, come back." Well, Elijah came back and said, You're ready for your shiny green pine needles, right?
Oh, no, said the little pine tree. You know what I'd like now? I'd like shiny green leaves that change color just like all the other trees in the forest.
But don't you know, said Elijah, when it gets cold, all those trees lose their leaves. You're going to lose all your leaves.
Oh, no, not me. I'm special. I won't lose my leaves. And the big old oak tree bent down and said, you'll be sorry. Oh, no, I won't, oak tree. I'll be just like you, and I'll be so happy. The very next day, the little pine tree had shiny green leaves. And as it got colder and colder, the little pine tree noticed that the oak tree changed its colors of leaves. The leaves were orange and yellow and green and just beautiful. And then he said, oh, oak tree, look at your leaves. They're all different colors. And look, me too. Oh, I knew I would love this. I am so happy. But as it got colder and colder, you know, the little pine tree noticed that the oak tree began to lose its leaves. Oh, oak tree, look at you. You're losing your leaves, but not me. I've still got my leaves. And she did. She kept her leaves all fall, and the poor old oak tree lost all its leaves. But then there was a very heavy snowstorm, and it was so much snow that it knocked all the leaves off one by one. And the poor little pine tree, he was left without any leaves, and it was freezing cold. Oh, I'm so cold. I didn't know this would happen. They told me I'd lose my leaves, but I didn't believe them. Oh, I'm so unhappy. I am so cold without my leaves. Oh, I've been so foolish. I had shiny green pine needles that stayed green the whole year round, and I never lost them. And I wanted gold leaves, and a man came and he stole all my gold leaves. And then I wanted glass leaves. Everyone knows that glass breaks, but I was so foolish. And then I wanted leaves that change color like all the other trees in the forest. And look what happened. I lost them all, and I'm so cold. Oh, I am so unhappy. Well, Elijah felt very sorry for the little pine tree. And the very next day, the little pine tree had his shiny green pine needles. And the big old oak tree bent over and said, you look beautiful, just the way you are. And from that day on, the little pine tree didn't want to be any other tree in the forest. She just wanted to be herself. All right, I'm gonna stand up and tell you this story. It's the Diamond Tree. And it's a story that comes all the way from Morocco. And, okay, I want y'all that are here to kind of get in one group so I can kind of focus on you. Okay, can you get in the middle for me? Once upon a time, there was a man whose name was Nissim. Nissim was very poor, and he lived in a house that had no running water. To get water for his family, he had to trudge all the way down to the river and carry a whole barrel of water back for his family. It took him all day, and by the time he arrived home, it was dark. He had just enough energy to go to bed. One day, he went all the way to get water. He came all the way back with that heavy barrel. When the next morning he went to get a drink of water, there was no water in the barrel. It was missing. My goodness, who could have stolen my water? Well, he had to go all the way back to the river to get more water. He brought it back and went to sleep, and the next morning he went out to get a drink of water. There wasn't a single drop left in the barrel. Oh, no, said Nissim. Who could be stealing my water? I'm going to get to the bottom of this. So that night, he hid in the bottom of the barrel. And sure enough, during the middle of the night, two
huge eagles swooped out of the sky and picked up that barrel with Nissim hiding inside it and flew off with it. They flew for hours and hours and hours, and poor Nissim was crouched inside the barrel saying, "What if these eagles should drop the barrel from this height? I'll fall and smash to death." But the eagles flew on and on and on and safely put the barrel down on a ledge overlooking a big sea, and they flew off into a tree. Nissim suddenly peeped out of the barrel and he looked around. He saw the sea and he saw the eagles in a nest in a tree. The eagles saw the man peeking out of the barrel and they flew down. "Oh, please don't hurt me," said Nissim. I won't bother you."
"Oh, we're not going to hurt you," said the eagles. "We're really not eagles. We're really children. A wicked witch came to our town, and she kidnapped all the children and turned us into eagles to carry water back for this tree." This tree was no ordinary tree, because Nissim saw it was covered with diamonds.
"You mean you carry water back for a witch?"
"Oh, yes, and when we're too tired to carry water back for her tree, she turns us into diamonds."
"You mean there's more children here?"
"Oh, yes," said the eagles. "All those diamonds on the tree are really children. Can you help us get away from this wicked witch and bring us back to our mothers and fathers?"
"I guess so," said Nissim, "but
where am I going to find this witch?"
"Right here!" And there, standing in front of Nissim, was the most frightful witch.
"My dear man, have you come to be a new eagle to carry water back for my tree?"
"Oh," Nissim thought, "I better do something really fast, or she really will turn me into an eagle."
"I don't think you have the power to turn anybody into an eagle."
"Oh, yes, I do. It's the easiest thing in the world." "Well, if you think that you could turn someone into an eagle, can you turn eagles back into children?"
"Of course I can. You just watch."
And the witch began to chant a spell.
"Eagles in the sky, diamonds in the tree. Eagles are children. It's up to me. Turn back into a child for as long as I say, whether for an hour or whether for a day."
And suddenly there were two children standing right in front of Nissim, so happy to be children again.
"Now are you convinced?" said the witch as she squinted her eye and poked a crooked finger at Nissim.
"Oh, not really. I mean, anybody could have done that. I would need to see something else, like maybe you could turn one of those diamonds back into a child. Can you do that?"
"Of course I can."
And the witch went over to the tree, plucked off one of the diamonds, quite proud of herself, and she began chanting a spell.
"Eagles in the sky, diamonds in the tree, diamonds are children, it's up to me. Turn back into a child for as long as I say, whether for an hour or whether for a day."
And like that, suddenly, there was another child standing right there.
"Now you must be convinced," said the witch.
"Oh, not really," said Nissim. Maybe you could do something really great, and then I would be convinced, but I'd have to see it with my own eyes. If you could turn yourself into a diamond, then I would believe you were the most powerful witch in the whole world. If you can't do it, then forget it."
"Of course I can. You just watch."
And the witch began to chant a spell.
"Eagles in the sky, diamonds in the tree. No trick in this world is too difficult for me. I'll turn into a diamond to show you that I can. And then I'll destroy you, you foolish man."
And suddenly, there was a new diamond on the tree, much bigger than all the other diamonds and blood red in color. The witch went over to the diamond, plucked it off the tree, and threw it as hard and far as he could. And the minute it hit the water, it burst into flame and disappeared. And at the same instant, All those diamonds that were all over that tree turned back into children. Oh, thank God you were safe, said Nissim. And all the children were so happy to be children again. One of the girls said, but how are we going to get home? We're stranded out here. Oh, no, we're not, said Nissim. You know, we have this tree. We could cut down the tree and make a boat out of it and sail home. So the children went looking for an axe, and somebody found one. Nissim, being the only grown-up there, chopped down the tree. You'll never guess what was inside. The witch had hidden a chest full of diamonds, real diamonds this time. Nissim took all those diamonds out and handed one to each child. There was just enough to go around and one for himself. And they made a terrific boat, and they dragged it down to the sea. And they got in, sailed happily home. Nissim saw that each of those children were delivered home. And then when he walked into his own house, his wife said, oh, thank God you are safe. We were so worried about you. And Nissim, in Hebrew, the name means miracles. And you know what he did with the diamond he had? He sold it. He bought a house that had a well right next door so he didn't have to schlep or go to that river anymore. And he gave some of the money that was left over to the poor and the needy. He built a new synagogue for the town. A synagogue is what Jews pray in, like a church. And all those children that Nissim saw safely home, they visit him all the time. They've become the best of friends. And that's the story of the diamond tree, and it comes from a book by the same name. It's a collection of Jewish folk tales, The Diamond Tree. I think you all like to see stories, right?
Yeah.
Nicole.
This is an instrument from Israel. Yeah, it's made out of olive wood. For those of you who've just come in, I'm Linda Spitzer from Miami, and though I tell folk tales from all over the world in all cultures, I specialize in Jewish folk tales. That's what my heritage is. And I like to pass on stories that you might never have heard before. So that's why I'm up here, so that I can share them with you. And this story comes all the way from Eastern Europe, where the Jewish people lived before they came to Israel or to America. They lived a very difficult life. They lived in little villages. And the people in the countries they lived made it very difficult for them to earn a living to feed their children. They could barely earn a living. They wouldn't allow them to have jobs. So this story is about a very religious Jew. His name is Yussel. Yussel and Rivka. And they live in a village way outside of Shebrashin. The story is the two goats of Shebrashin. A long time ago, Rivka and Yussel lived outside the village in Poland of Shebrashin. Have you ever had a dream that you could go into a tunnel or a magic cave or a passageway and you could get there instantly? Well, this is the kind of dream that this story is based on. Like I said, the Jewish people in Poland at that time lived such a difficult life. They often wished they could just step into a cave or a magic passage and get all the way to the land of Israel. Well, Yussel would go into the village. They lived way outside near a woods, and Yussel would have to go into Shebrashin each Sabbath to pray and study with the other Jews. During the week, Rivka had two goats, and they would milk the goats, and that's how they eked out a very poor living. One day, Rivka went to milk her goats as usual, and the goats weren't there. Oh, no, oh, no. And she went and looked for the goats, She couldn't find them anywhere. She looked all over the woods. Oh, no. And she had Yessel come and help her look. He couldn't find them either. She says, it's all my fault. I forgot to tie the goats up. And now they've wandered off, and this is the only thing we know to make a living. We sell the milk and butter and cheese from these goats. What else do we know how to do? There, there, Rivka, said Yessel. Don't you know whatever God does is for the best? Something good will happen. Well, Rivka didn't understand how this could be, but Yessel's words comforted her and calmed her down. And so when the goats returned home that evening, they were full of milk. And Yessel sold the milk, and people said it was the sweetest milk they had ever tasted. The next day, Rivka didn't even bother to tie up the goats. And sure enough, the goats came home that evening just bursting with milk. And when Yessel sold the milk, the most curious thing happened. People proclaimed that the milk had miraculous powers. People who were sick and ravaged with diseases were instantly cured. People who were handicapped and crippled were made whole again. People who had colds and aches and pains, by just drinking the milk, suddenly got well. No one in Shebrashin was sick. Everyone was cured. Well, Yessel got real curious. Where were these goats going that they got this kind of milk? So the next day, Yessel quietly followed them as they scampered into the woods. And suddenly, there were two trees that were very close together. And the goats went between the two trees and disappeared. Yessel came over to investigate, and he saw that the goats had gone in between the two trees, and it was like there was a cave, and he pushed the trees aside, and there was a hole in the ground. Without hesitation, Yessel went into that hole in the ground, and he found himself in a long, dark tunnel. There was a light at the end of the tunnel, but it was way far away, and Yessel could see with a little bit of light the bobbing tails of the goats. As he was walking along, following the goat's tails, suddenly a monster jumped out of him with green, scaly claws and said, "Go back! Go back! There's danger ahead!" But Yessel did not pay attention. All of a sudden, two little devils poked their little pitchforks at him, and they snorted out fire and flames from their nostrils, and they stuck out their serpent's tongues at him. But Yessel did not go back. There were dancing girls who tried to seduce Yessel into stopping and playing with them. But Yessel didn't pay any attention. There was even hundreds and thousands of gold coins that fell down from the roof of the cave, tempting Yessel to stop and pick up the gold coins. But not for one instant did Yessel lose his focus and concentration. He walked straight ahead, looking neither to the left nor to the right. Not once did he lose his faith. He got to the end of the tunnel, and he walked out into the daylight. And there was a little boy, and he was playing a flute. When he saw a man walking out of the tunnel, he said to him, "Shalom, chaver, eifo chadash po." Hello, friend. Are you new here? That's Hebrew for, are you new here? Eifo machadash po? What are you doing here? When Yessel realized that the little boy was speaking in Hebrew, he said, "I found it. I found the magic tunnel that got me all the way to the land of Israel." And he said, "Eifo zeh, where is this?" And the little boy said, "Oh, Ataba Sfad, Ataba Eretz Yisrael. You're in Israel. You're in the city of Sfad." Well, Yessel was so excited, he said, I've got to let the others know about this. I've got to write a note home. And he took a little piece of paper out of his pocket and a pencil, and he wrote a note. Shalom, chaver. Hello, friends, and Rivka. I found it. I actually found the magic passage. All you have to do is follow the goats, but don't be frightened. They'll lead you, but don't be frightened of what you see in the tunnel. It's not real. And I'll wait for you here. See you soon. Love, Yessel. He said, what am I going to do with this? No. He said, I know. I'll roll it up. I'll stick it in the goat's ear. And that's what he did. Rivka'll surely find it there. Well, the goats returned home without Yessel. And Rivka said, oh, no. Oh, no. Something terrible has happened to him. And they waited 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. Yessel didn't come home. She says, I can't live here all out in the woods by myself. I'm going to have to move into Shebrashim. And I can't take the goats with me. I have no place to keep them. So she sold her house, sold the goats to the butcher, and moved into Shebrashim. By the time the butcher got ready to slaughter the goats, and he was getting ready to throw away the tail and the hooves and the ears, that's when the note fell out. And the butcher said, oh my God, I've already killed the goats. And he called the rabbi, and the rabbi read the note, and he said, it's too late. We can't bring the goats back to life. And he went to tell Rivka the story of what happened to Yessel. Well, he kept the note for many years, and they told all their children and grandchildren in Shebrashim about it. And many years later, Rivka and her children moved to the land of Israel to find Yessel. And the butcher and the rabbi had told everyone in Shebrashim the story of the two goats. And now you know the story too. The goats of Shebrashim. Thank you so much for listening to my stories.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you very much. After we get everybody cleared out, we have another time. Well, hello, how are you all?
Fine.
I'm glad you decided to come over today. I met Peggy, for some of you who do not know me.
And you came to our school.
What?
You came to our school.
I know. And I'm so glad you all came today. Are you having a good time?
Yes.
Great. Well, just enjoy everything that's going on. And this is a chance. If any of you have a story you would like to tell. But and if you have
we
a story
know.
You would
the
like to tell.
The story doesn't really end that way. Oh, I
you
changed
can if you
the
want
ending.
To.
It's a story. Just ends.
And somebody have a
story?
Don't we have a story
really
tell
ends that the town burned down, the note burned down.
Nobody has a story.
When I told it to children, they were very unhappy with the ending. So I made at least
hope. Yeah, oh,
hope.
You have one.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you for telling me.
Well, thank you.
I know you
for listening.
What happened next? Okay, next page.
Are you on next?
Thank you.
Go ahead, Nate.
I'm going to tell you the story that is the favorite one that I tell to my kids at home.
Oh.
It's called.
What happened to Esau? What happened to Esau?
Once upon a time, there was an old man, and he was crazy. He didn't like to be around other people at all. And so he built himself a house way in the middle of the forest on the edge of the green swamp where the mist hung day and night. A real creepy place. Not a place that you and I want to live at all. Well, one day, he was sitting in his log cabin. He was getting ready to prepare his meal, and he just cooked over the fire in his fireplace, you know, and he had that fire going, and he was getting ready to cook something, and the most peculiar such thing came through the logs there right up next to him. It was terrible looking. It was covered with hair like a cat, only it was red and had terrible teeth and long claws and a tail like an alligator, only it had hair on it and glowing red eyes. And that thing ran right up thing's tail off, and it ran off back through the cracks. Now, I told you he was crazy, and I sure wouldn't have done this myself, but he bent over and he picked up that tail, and he said, you know, I think I can just skin this and have it for my supper. And that's what he did. He skinned that tail, and he sliced it up, and he put it in a pan, and he cooked it, and he ate it for his supper. He thought it was wonderful. That night, he went to bed. It had gotten dark, and he was tired, and he went right to sleep. But something woke him up in the middle of the night. Some sound. You know how you wake up and you're not quite sure what it was, and he was lying there waiting until he would hear it again. And then he heard just quietly from way down in the swamp, "Tabe, Tabe, give me back my tail." "Oh my gosh, it's that thing. It's that thing. I cut his tail off. He wants it back. Well, I'll just send my dogs right down there to take care of that." And he called up, "Oh, dogs, go get him." And he could hear them barking all the way down into the swamp. And then it got quiet, and he figured, well, that's the end of that. And he went back to sleep. A little bit later in the night, about 11 o'clock, something woke him up again. And it was a closer sound. It was like a scratching sound right outside his window on the outside of the house. What? It must be that thing again. And then he heard it. "Oh my gosh, that thing has come right up here to the house to get me. I better call my dogs again and throw, come on, dogs." And they did not come. What he did not know is that when he sent them down into the swamp the first time, it had eaten them one by one. Well, after a while, it got quiet again. And now I couldn't have gone back to sleep. But he went sound asleep. And about 1 o'clock, in the dead of the night, something woke him up again. And he just lay there in the bed, scared, knowing what it must be, and waiting to hear that sound again. And he heard it. It was the sound like a cat's toes on the floor at the foot of the bed. He couldn't see it because it was just black, dark there in his bedroom, but he heard it. And then he heard it jump lightly to the wooden bedstead at the end of the bed. And then he was just so scared he could not move or speak or anything. And then he felt it jump right onto his feet, and he lay there frozen in fear as it walked right up his body, until he could see its glowing red eyes right there in front of his face and feel its hot breath breathing right there on him. And then he heard it say, "Tabe, give me back my tail. I know you can give it back to me now. I promise I don't have it anymore." But it was too late, and that thing just tore him to pieces. And they say it Now, years later, after that old cabin was all rotted down and gone, people would go a long way out of their way to keep from going by there. Because at night, when the moon was full, or even in the daytime, when the wind was blowing kind of cool and eerie through the moss, you listen quietly.
Having you all here. Don't some of you have a story to tell? Wouldn't one of you like to get up and tell a story? Well, let me tell you one teeny tiny kind of a ghost story from North Carolina. It's not real spooky, but it's kind of spooky. There's a place up in North Carolina that is a complete circle, and nothing will grow on that ground, all around that circle. It's perfectly sterile. Nothing ever grows on it. But the weeds grow in the middle of it, but nothing grows around the sides.
who go up there claim that a long, long time ago the Indians had a grit mill and they walked around that circle. And that's why nothing grows on it. That's why it's dead. But other folks claim that it's really the devil comes around at night, walking around that devil, that circle, trying to figure out what evil things he can do here on earth. And nobody knows what caused that ground to be that way. But it's a very strange thing. You go up there and you put some paper or a tin can or something around on that ground, the next day it's gone. And nobody comes. One time, recently, a young man decided to spend the night near the circle. He was going to find out what caused it. But the preacher, a minister who lived down the road, saw that man running real fast down the road, as fast as he was hightailing it out of there. And nobody ever found out why he was running, but something frightened him. And that devil's, it's called the devil's tramping ground, is still up in North Carolina. And sometimes you can find it in the literature of North Carolina. So we find all kinds of things here in America, that strange things go on, and we don't really know what causes them. Some folks say it's atmospheric conditions, and some folks say it might be something else. Well, listen, it's time for storytelling to be over now, and if you all won't be telling a story, then I guess we'll just have to let you go and do your own thing. Thank you all for coming so much this year, and have a real good time walking around and just having fun.